It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
A UN envoy warns the war against Ebola may take 6 more months. Another healthcare worker succumbs to that deadly virus. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The UN's top envoy on the Ebola outbreak in West Africa warned Monday in Freetown, Sierra Leone. The fight against the deadly virus could take 6 more months to win. David Nabarro, a British physician, said the effort to defeat the virus is not a battle but a war which requires everybody working hard and effectively together.
The purpose of this visit was to understand the nature of the outbreak as it is now and to identify ways in which the response can be stepped up so that the outbreak can be stopped as quickly as possible.
The virus, first detected in February in Guinea, has impacted at least 4 West African countries, killing 1,427, with more than 2,600 confirmed cases. Monday, the World Health Organization said more than 120 healthcare workers have died treating others. In Liberia Monday, a doctor who was one of 3 Africans to be treated with an experimental Ebola drug has died. Officials confirmed the death of Dr. Abraham Borbor, who was deputy chief medical doctor at the country's largest hospital. Meanwhile, the United Nations says airlines that have stopped flying to countries with the Ebola outbreak are hampering the response to the epidemic. A UN spokesman said the action, although understandable, is unwarranted. He said the flight boycotts are not an effective way to stop the virus and hamper the movement of international experts who need to control the outbreak. The WHO also said Monday it sent protective equipment for medical staff to the Democratic Republic of Congo, where authorities on Sunday confirmed 2 cases of the disease in northern Equator province. This is VOA News. In Canada, experiments on monkeys injected with a vaccine produced by Immunovaccine Incorporated of Nova Scotia survived the Ebola virus. It's one of several U.S., Canadian, and British companies testing new anti-Ebola vaccines. In Nigeria, Monday, authorities revised downward the number of confirmed cases of Ebola from 14 to 13. Nigeria has suffered 5 fatalities since the first death of a visiting Liberian American to Lagos last month. Nigerian Dr. Lawal Bakari has begun a telephone helpline and is using social media to provide information to the public about Ebola.
The helpline has become the core of the process because this is the link between the healthcare workers, especially those who are handling the Ebola patients, the outbreak, and the public. The public in this case means people at home, within Lagos and outside Lagos, and also healthcare workers or hospitals within the country that needs to reach those who are handling the cases, who need to evacuate cases, or who need second opinion on cases that are visiting their hospitals with symptoms that look like Ebola, that need, you know, further information before they know what to do.
In the United Kingdom, the family of 29-year-old healthcare worker William Pooley, the man who contracted Ebola in Sierra Leone, says he's in the best possible place for treatment. Pooley returned to the UK Sunday aboard a special cargo plane and transferred to an isolation unit at London's Royal Free Hospital. The United States and 4 top European allies have warned against outside interference in Libya. Washington, Britain, France, Germany, and Italy issued a statement saying actions by outsiders exacerbate divisions. The French press agency quotes 2 U.S. officials saying the United Arab Emirates sent warplanes on bombing missions against Islamist militia over the past week using bases in Egypt. The allies also condemn fighting in major cities such as Tripoli and Benghazi. Officials from Libya's neighbors, Algeria, Chad, Egypt, Sudan, and Tunisia, Monday met in Cairo to discuss the worsening chaos in Libya. Libya's foreign minister, Mohamed Abdelaziz, said his government is not asking for foreign intervention, but involvement led by the UN Security Council to resolve the North African country's crisis. Meanwhile, Libya's former parliament reconvened Monday and elected an Islamist-backed deputy, Omar al-Hassi, as prime minister. The Islamist Misrata militia, which won control of Tripoli's international airport Saturday, called for the Islamist-dominated General National Congress to reconvene, insisting the new parliament, meeting in Tobruk and dominated by liberals and federalists, doesn't represent the people. UN human rights official Alicia Londano Monday criticized the alleged abuse of young albinos in Tanzanian government care centers. At least 74 have been murdered in the East African country since 2000. She says while the government moved the young people to government health care centers as protective measure, she says they are often abused. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's military denies Boko Haram has taken control of a northern town.
The whole claim is an empty claim that cannot be sustained. Besides, we reaffirm that no group of terrorists will be allowed to have any claim to any portion of Nigeria. And to that extent, any group making such claim at the moment is only delusive.
Major General Chris Olukolade is Nigeria's military spokesman. A Liberian doctor dies from Ebola as a U.S. CDC official travels to Liberia's Lofa County. Libya's political and military turmoil deepened on Monday, and South Sudan warring parties signed yet another ceasefire, but will it work?
We remain committed as government forces to the ceasefire that has been signed in Addis Ababa. And the failure of the previous ceasefire is squarely on the rebel forces that have never stopped firing.
Colonel Philip Agua is South Sudan's military spokesman. The UN reports a spike in racialistic killings of albinos in Tanzania, and thousands of people attend the funeral of a black teenager killed in a controversial police shooting. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's military spokesman says the National Army launched an operation against the Islamist militant group Boko Haram in Gwoza, a town in the country's northwest that the militants claimed they captured. Major General Chris Olukolade also says senior military officials are in close contact with their counterparts in Cameroon after some Nigerian soldiers battling Boko Haram found themselves in the neighboring country's territory. Olukolade tells reporter Peter Clotty that the military is gathering intelligence from the video of Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shakoa announcing that the militants have established an Islamic law in Gwoza.
We have seen that report, not as we are studying it for intelligence purpose. I can say at the moment that the whole claim is an empty claim that cannot be sustained. Besides, we reaffirm that no group of terrorists will be allowed to have any claim to any portion of Nigeria. And to that extent, any group making such claim at the moment is only delusive. And we're doing everything to handle it. The entire area is under a military operation at the moment. And by that, we're going to put an end to the menace of this terrorist disturbing our people.
Now, Major General, there are concerns that some of the military officers are unwilling to fight Boko Haram because they are poorly equipped. What do you say to such criticisms?
The criticism has various reasons, major among which is perhaps intended as a psychological warfare on our troops to demoralize them. But to the best of our knowledge, yes, like all other army, we may not have all that we require at the moment, but we are maximizing all that we have to achieve the result of dealing with terrorists and keeping them off our country. And all that we can boast of at the moment is that we have the capacity to manage the situation. We're not going to relent until we handle the situation as mandated by our country. We're getting incrementally improved in our equipment and weapons, and we're sure that all things being equal with the way we're handling the situation, we'll soon achieve our results somehow.
There are some Nigerians who say that Boko Haram has been allowed to run rampage, kill people unwantedly and all that, and they're asking the military to do more. What assurances do you give such people?
Well, the approach is indeed giving a lot of concerns to everybody, and it's understandable. People are traumatized, but you know it is consistent with the activities of terrorists, which we are working out the appropriate ways to handle it and ensure that we don't kill unnecessary civilian casualty in the process. At the moment, we're fashioning out what we believe will get us that result, and we're going to reverse this trend, all things being equal, in a very short while.
There was a report that some of your officers were pushed by these Islamists fighting them into neighboring Cameroon. What can you tell me about this development?
Well, the development came as a result of maneuvers to check the infiltration of terrorists around the border. And in the process, our troops found their way within the territory of Cameroon. And the normal protocols for addressing such issues has been completed by discussions and interaction between the military authorities. And by that, we'll be able to smoothen issues. And the troops are on the way to joining their unit at the moment.
Major General Chris Olukolade is Nigeria's military spokesman. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. A Liberian doctor who was one of three Africans to be treated with the experimental Ebola drug ZMAP has died. Liberian officials on Monday confirmed the death of Dr. Ibrahim Bobo, who was deputy chief medical director at the country's largest hospital. Meanwhile, Rebecca Murrow, an Epidemic Intelligence Service officer at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, is on her way to Liberia's Lofa County, where she will work with local teams to improve the tracing and investigating of Ebola cases in the region. Murrow talks to Ricky Shryak about the importance of tracking the outbreak, which at nearly 1,500 deaths so far is the worst Ebola epidemic ever recorded.
I'm going out to counties to provide training on what would be a complete sort of data collection and data transfer set of systems so that, you know, at the county level and nationally, we can track the burden of the disease, which would certainly inform the local and international community, both just in terms of the numbers of Ebola, but also to help allocate resources.
It is one of your main concerns, this underreporting of the disease that many people are talking about.
Right, and I think underreporting is a challenging word to use because it can seem active in the sense that, you know, people are purposefully underreporting and hiding versus just underreporting because the system isn't complete. In terms of national surveillance and underreporting, I think there's just a challenge with resources when it comes to personnel is the main one. There just aren't enough people currently that are trained and participating as case investigation teams and contact tracing teams. There's also, you know, these counties are actively looking for support. WHO has now started assigning their technical assistance to each county. It definitely is going to take some work. Everyone's interested in getting their numbers up to speed. Not only do they just want to help their community, that's first and foremost, but they also understand that it will help them advocate for resources.
And how important is contact tracing to eventually stopping this outbreak, which the WHO says will most likely last the next 6 to 9 months?
So first I'll say it's very important because of the contagious nature of the disease and the fact that it is spread by contact. I want to say that the only way that we could really end this is by having complete contact tracing and making sure that we know the Ebola outbreak will only be deemed complete when we've gone through two cycles of the 21-day follow-up period. In the sense of actually trying to end it, it's an extremely necessary component. GCHVs are the community-level, basically volunteers who have, in many counties, are being recruited to being contact tracers. So once they get mobilized and incentivized across the country, you know, we're hopeful that we'll have enough people on the ground to do the complete contact tracing.
So there's going to be volunteers who are voluntarily contact tracing this disease.
I guess they're volunteers kind of in their terminology, their traditional label, but given just the nature of this outbreak, there is interest to give them salaries, but donors would have to step up and help provide that resource.
That was Rebecca Murrow, an intelligence service officer at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. She was speaking to Ricky Shryak from rural Liberia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 26. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. South Sudan's military spokesman says his troops have always respected past ceasefire agreements and will honor the latest one reportedly signed Monday in Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. But Colonel Philip Agua says rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar are to blame for consistently violating previous cessation of hostilities agreements. The regional group, Intergovernmental Authority on Development, known as IGAD, which has been mediating the talks on Monday, called on President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Machar to form a unity government within 45 days. IGAD also threatened sanctions if the new government failed. Military spokesman Colonel Agua tells me Juba welcomes IGAD's mediation and hopes the rebels will this time around uphold the terms of the latest ceasefire agreement.
We remain committed as government forces to the ceasefire that has been signed in Addis Ababa. And the failure of the previous ceasefire it is clearly on the rebel forces that have never stopped firing. SPLA commit itself and recommit itself again and again for the cessation of hostilities, because we are a people-based army. And we know that the people of South Sudan have been suffering a lot. This is why we appreciate the regional and international community efforts to bring this war to an end. We hope the other side this time will be serious to respect the ceasefire.
Colonel, your government keeps saying that the rebels are responsible for breaking previous ceasefire agreements. It takes two to tango. The rebels are saying also your government is not serious to maintaining previous agreements.
On our side, we believe if the international community has been monitoring keenly, it is not difficult to identify the offender from the defender. The SPLA has been defending itself, and we have welcomed the monitoring teams on the ground. They got monitors to be stationed in all the locations of the war-affected areas, and that is an indicative of our commitment to cessation of hostilities. The other side have rejected the presence of monitors on the ground, and this is simply an indication that they have rejected the ceasefire.
IGAD, which has been mediating these talks, is threatening sanctions if there's a continuation of this conflict. As a military person who is waging this war, are you concerned that IGAD might come back at you or other military people in your government?
We welcome IGAD, the mechanism of implementing peace in South Sudan. We recommit ourselves to the ceasefire, and we hope this time IGAD will have a very effective mechanism to monitor on the ground who is violating ceasefire, and whatever means that will be used by the regional and international community to bring peace to South Sudan, the SPLA appreciates, because we wanted our people to come back from refugee camp and those who are displaced and facing hunger and starvation to go back to their home areas.
Colonel Philip Agoor is South Sudan's military spokesman. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Libya's political and military conflict heated up on Monday after the Islamist coalition, which controls the capital, Tripoli, appointed a new prime minister and declared the newly elected parliament null and void. Prime Minister Abdullah Al-Thani responded by calling the Islamist forces in Tripoli tyrants, saying they could not govern the country by force. Edward Urania reports for VOA from Cairo.
Libya's rival political forces threw down the gauntlet at each other Monday as their political and military feud intensified. Newly reappointed Prime Minister Abdullah Thani told journalists in the eastern Libyan city of Tobruk that the Islamist Fajr militia, which captured the capital's airport on Saturday, is trying to impose its will by force and that its political moves are illegal. He says he opposes anyone who tries to divide the country and the attempt by Nuri Boussahmane, Speaker of the old General National Congress, to appoint a new government is null and void, since Boussahmane is now an ordinary citizen with no authority to appoint anyone. Mr. Thani added that any meeting of the former assembly is illegitimate. He said Libya's new parliament, elected in June, is the only body with the authority to appoint and that all Libyans should unite around it. Earlier, pro-Islamist political leader Omar Homaidan gave a press conference in Tripoli declaring the replacement of Mr. Thani. He said Abdullah Thani has been removed from his positions as, in his words, caretaker prime minister and defense minister, and that Omar Suleiman Salah Al-Khassi has been appointed to form a new national government in the next week after taking the oath of office before National Congress Speaker Nuri Boussahmane. Boussahmane led the move to oust Mr. Zaidan last March. Meanwhile, in Cairo, Libya's neighbors met to discuss the conflict and called for national dialogue to end Libya's violence. Egyptian Foreign Minister Sama Shoukry said the regional grouping had agreed to oppose any sort of outside intervention. He said the parties had agreed to respect Libya's unity and sovereignty and to refuse any outside interference in the country's internal affairs, promoting national dialogue to solve the ongoing conflict. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
United Nations human rights officials say there's been a spike in racial attacks and killings of albinos in Tanzania. They are calling for greater protection for albinos who face a dire situation and are extremely vulnerable. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN Human Rights Office reports five new attacks against people with albinism occurred over an 11-day period in Tanzania this month. This, it says, brings the number of attacks since 2000 to 151, including 74 murders. Albinism is a genetically inherited condition in which people lack pigmentation. While it is very rare in most parts of the world, affecting 1 in 20,000 people, it is quite common in sub-Saharan Africa. In Tanzania, 1 in 1,400 people are born with this condition. UN human rights official Alicia Ludono, who has just returned from a mission to Tanzania, says she is very concerned by the marginalization, discrimination, and persecution to which people with albinism are subjected in Africa. She says they are portrayed as ghosts, as devils, as people who bring bad luck, death, or sickness.
The worst form of discrimination are the ritual attacks. These are as well rooted in superstition. Body parts of persons with albinism are used for witchcraft purposes. There is this belief in certain countries that body parts have magical powers, and if it's used in potions produced by witch doctors, it will bring wealth and power.
As a result, people with albinism are mutilated for their body parts. Ludono says a limb can fetch thousands of dollars on the black market. She says a person who has had an arm or a leg cut off is usually left unattended and bleeds to death. Victims who survive usually receive no communal support or legal assistance. Non-governmental organizations have documented 328 attacks in 24 different countries since 2000. They include Burundi, Ivory Coast, and Swaziland. Most attacks occur in rural areas. Ludono says on her trip to Tanzania, everyone linked the recent attacks to the presidential election set for October 2015.
There is this common knowledge of people with albinism that the attacks increase when there is election. One of the reasons they said is that there are some politicians that use witchcraft for gaining power. This is part of the belief.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thousands of people from across the country gather Monday in the Midwestern U.S. city of St. Louis to say goodbye to the African-American teenager fatally shot by a white police officer during a street confrontation in nearby Ferguson. Michael Brown's funeral comes more than 2 weeks after the shooting, which touched off days of violent demonstrations resulting in more than 100 arrests. VOA's Chris Simpkins reports from St. Louis, where emotions were running high over a young life cut short.
They came to this St. Louis church to celebrate the life of 18-year-old Michael Brown. Thousands who never knew him paid respects to the unarmed teenager who was fatally shot by a white police officer. Pastor Willie Stallworth came to offer support to the family.
Well, first of all, I would just pray God's peace upon the family and that they will find comfort in this moment. And then hereafter that their faith in their Lord and Savior will also be strengthened.
Those attending Brown's funeral came in a spirit of peace. It was a far cry from the days of violent demonstrations that tore apart the predominantly African-American community of Ferguson. Gilbert Gann drove hours from Ohio.
This could have been any one of us. So this is the one that hit me the hardest. Violence shouldn't beget violence, but, you know, there has to be a common ground, a formidable solution to the problem, because, you know, after a while, this thing can happen. It can explode anywhere in America.
Inside the church, Brown's family was joined by prominent religious and civil rights leaders like Al Sharpton.
Michael Brown does not want to be remembered for a riot. He wants to be remembered as the one that made America deal with how we gonna police in the United States.
That was viewers Crip Simpkins reporting from St. Louis, Missouri. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Marco Woma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the Olympic Youth Games in Nanjing, China. For the second day in a row, Africans won 9 medals in athletics on Monday. Ethiopian Sebi Sibe Sidamo led Kenyan Amos Kirui and Moroccan Hicham Chemlal in an African medal podium sweep in boys' 2,000-meter steeplechase. Ugandan Godfrey Balimumiti and Ethiopian Morka Mulata were second and third in boys' 800 meters. Ethiopian Tesfaye Alem and Kenyan Wilfred Mbithe made it a 1-2 African win in girls' 1500 meters. South African Giselle Magerman triumphed in girls' 400 meter hurdles, while Kenyan Rosalind Chepngetich and Ethiopian Zwedinesh Teklemariam bagged gold and silver medals respectively in girls' 2000 meter steeplechase. Staying in Nanjing, Egypt clinched the silver medal in boys' handball, while Ahmed Ahmed of Egypt clinched a bronze medal in the boys' 85-kilogram Greco-Roman wrestling event. Turning to football, club competitions in Algeria are suspended following the death of JS Kabylie's Cameroonian striker Albert Ebosse in Tizi Ouzou on Saturday. The Algerian Football Federation head Mohamed Raurao disclosed in Algiers on Monday. Ebosse had equalized for his side through a penalty during the match against USM Algiers. USM Algiers eventually won the match 2-1. The 1st of November stadium in Tizi Ouzou, where the tragedy took place, has been closed indefinitely. On a more cheerful note, Nigerian attacking midfielder Asisat Oshoala was bestowed with the Adidas Golden Ball Award for being the most outstanding player at the just-concluded FIFA Women's Under-20 World Cup in Canada. She also received the Adidas Golden Ball Award for the tournament's top scorer with 7 goals to her credit. Meanwhile, Stephen Keshi will resume duties as head coach of the African champions Nigeria Super Eagles for at least the first 2 matches in their 2015 Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers next month. Keshi's contract expired at the end of the 2014 FIFA World Cup and had yet to receive a fresh mandate to continue guiding the African champions. To avert a crisis, Nigeria Sports Ministry and the Nigeria Football Federation reached an agreement to hand Keshi a mandate to handle the Super Eagles for the first 2 AFCON qualifiers early next month, while negotiations for a substantive contract are in progress. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Oma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A Liberian doctor who was one of 3 Africans to be treated with an experimental Ebola drug has died. Liberian officials on Monday confirmed the death of Dr. Ibrahim Bobo, who was deputy chief medical doctor at the country's largest hospital. Bobo was one of 3 Liberia-based doctors to receive the drug Zimac. That's it for this Tuesday, August 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Barton in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
You want to listen to the latest African music? Dance to the best African beats from across the African continent? Then you don't have a problem. Just tune in to the African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays at exactly 0900 and 2000 Universal Time. African Beat, the show that brings happiness into your homes, smiles on your faces, So join me, your host, David Bandy, Monday through Friday, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time on The Voice of America.
African Beats
is the best. It's number one.
We love it.